The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. This week, after the FBI raid on the Mar-a-Lago home of former President Trump, the pressure is on the courts and the Justice Department. What merited or what can explain such a dramatic breach of precedent?
The corrupt establishment in Washington, D.C., they know what to do, and it is to destroy Trump.
The former president's son addresses the reality that is stranger than fiction.
That screenwriter would have been thrown out of Hollywood for, you know, publishing something unrealistic.
President Biden signs a bill I have labeled the IRS Expansion Act.
When you are under investigation from the IRS, you are guilty until you prove yourself innocent.
Herschel, the name that doesn't need any introduction. Herschel Walker is running for Senate in Georgia.
There's kids that are starving, and we got to stop this. And the way we can do it is by bringing people together, and they believe in separating people.
All this and more. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com. And follow me on Twitter, at Hugh Hewitt. And follow this program as well, at Town Hall Review. We'll start with the raid on Mar-a-Lago. Since the time we heard the news of the FBI's unannounced, unprecedented, heavy-handed entry into Donald Trump's Palm Beach home, I've emphasized one thing. This is unprecedented. We have never done this before in American history. My start in politics came when I began to work for former President Nixon, what I've called his wilderness years, the Elba of America, the Western White House in San Clemente. And the Bureau didn't do anything like this. And over our nearly 250-year history, we just don't do this. This raid of a residence of a former president has not been done. Tom Fitton of Judicial Watch gave us an update. He joined Joe Piscopo on AM 970 The Answer in New York City.
I'm reading here from Judicial Watch. Biden Justice Department opposes Judicial Watch federal court request to unseal affidavit behind unprecedented raid on Trump home. People are so off their game and so scared, Tom Fitton. You know that? We're scared. Tell us what you're doing, please, sir.
Well, it's a wild abuse of power. We saw the raid take place. We immediately went to the court and asked for information about it. We wanted the warrant. And when FBI agents typically go get warrants, there are supporting affidavits, which are sworn documents presented to the judge justifying the raid. Now, we did get the warrant out of them. And we also have not, though, gotten the sworn affidavit. And they said, oh, no, you can't have that affidavit. It will tell you what our criminal investigation is about and would ruin it, which we don't buy. And, you know, because the public has an interest here. You can't raid a president's home using secret reasons.
This is so bizarre. And we know it's a political takedown. And you know, Tom, that the White House knew about this. And the edict probably came out of the White House to Merrick Garland to the FBI, correct?
Well, I have no doubt the White House knew about it. You know, and in this day and age, you don't need an edict to come from President Biden. Look, there were leaks in the New York Times complaining how Garland wasn't strong enough in going after Trump. The left has been pressuring Garland to go after Trump. So, you know, no one needs to be told directly what to do. The corrupt establishment in Washington, D.C., they know what to do, and it's to destroy Trump and come up with any reason, manufacture any reason to destroy him, including raiding his home on a pretext, which is an argument about whether records are presidential records or not. Which is, you know, to describe it as to condemn it.
It's so true. And Tom Fitton, just to be clear, that the passports were returned, correct, Tom Fitton?
Well, those are the reports. Yeah. You have to wonder what else they took. They went in there with a warrant that allowed them to take anything. So they were all concerned about nuclear secrets, Joe, and classified information. Yet they asked for a warrant and got a warrant that allowed them to take any document in the office, it sounded like. You know, this is just on its face abusive. And in my view, the court ordered return every document they took back to Trump.
Yeah, that's but we love you digging into this, Tom. I'll tell you why. Because I watch the news and the network news, and they find out the DOJ will say something, and they'll say the FBI says that, and then then it's reported like it's the news. And I was watching ABC News the other day, and I'm watching, and they're reporting. Then they go to a reporter who backs it up, and I'm yelling at the TV saying, "Wait, that's just what the DOJ says. You can't believe them. Look at the Russia hoax. What happened?" And all of America is in a rage that they're doing this. This is beyond Trump. It's really not Donald Trump. This could happen to any of us, my friend. Where do we stand with all of this? I mean, because we feel, and we've had some experts on the show, Tom Fitton, say that Donald Trump will get indicted. And I'm not saying that he's guilty. They'll just find something. They'll make something up just to indict him, correct?
Yeah, and I think that's a view widely shared. And you know, the outrageous thing is that we say, well, he'll probably be indicted. No one can tell you what he'll be indicted over, because the presumption is they'll just make something up, manufacture a crime to try to jail the opposition leader of the current president. I mean, that to me is an act of despotism that ought to be really fought against.
The rationale for the raid's been shifting day to day. The leaks we see coming through legacy media outlets vary. Seems almost by day part. It would be comical if we're not so serious for our republic. My friend Mike Gallagher talked to Don Trump Jr., son to our 45th president.
If you were a Hollywood scriptwriter and you pitched a plot for a movie that said that the lawyer who represented Jeffrey Epstein's team and people who worked for Jeffrey Epstein became a federal judge, and then of all the thousands of judges in the country, he's the one who signed off on this Mar-a-Lago search warrant, which evidently allowed them to seize every single document generated during the 4 years of the Trump administration, which should have been the biggest red flag imaginable. But honest to goodness, Don, that wouldn't pass muster. They'd laugh that writer out of the pitch room.
That screenwriter would have been thrown out of Hollywood for, you know, publishing something unrealistic, and yet it's there. It's happening on a daily basis. We're seeing it before our very eyes, and it's just, you know, it's clearly a political vendetta. You know, they have weaponized the FBI. I mean, think about this, but, you know, it wasn't like a couple of, you know, bureaucrat agents showed up to Mar-a-Lago to, you know, to exercise this warrant. We heard about how desperate it was, and yet, you know, that Merrick Garland was weighing on it for weeks and months. Like, I thought, you know, he had the nuclear codes. Remember that one last week? I mean, he still had them. It's incredible. He must have taken the nuclear football from the White House. They showed up with the FBI's hostage rescue team. For your listeners who don't know what that is, that's like the SEAL teams of the FBI. But here, no problem. It's totally, totally above board.
Nothing to
you know,
see.
The countless things that the FBI has allowed to slide under their radar, all the attacks, all the shootings, all the people they've had on their radar, quote unquote, you know, that happens. You know, and goes by. Have they stopped anything? Have they done anything other than, again, be weaponized against the political enemies of the Democrat Party? It's getting bad. I mean, I said this, you know, the other day, and, you know, I've gone to great lengths to sort of separate out, you know, in my defense of law enforcement across the country, who've just done such an amazing job for the most part. You know, separate out like the bureaucrats in charge of the FBI and the door kickers. I've been saying this stuff for, hey, we got to, but like at this point, like if the HRT is being called in to do this at Mar-a-Lago, there have to be some FBI agents willing to step up. You know, every whistleblower, if it's against Republicans, is turned into a deity. They've been turned into heroes. Someone's got to say something.
All of this heavy-handed inquiry into Trump, was perhaps a fitting backdrop for the signing last week of legislation I have labeled the IRS Expansion Act. Legacy media outlets have notably dropped the use of the bill's alleged real name, the Inflation Reduction Act. Democrats couldn't get away with that. It became clear to the average American that this will have nothing to do with inflation, except perhaps, indeed, I think certainly, making it worse. Economist Stephen Moore sees the threat that I see, a greatly expanded IRS. Moore joined Chris DeGaulle on AM 990 The Answer in Philadelphia.
One of the things that really frightens me is when you look at the outrageous, you know, raid on the Mar-a-Lago compound there, and then you look at what the way that the Biden administration has weaponized the State Department, has weaponized the FBI, has weaponized the Justice Department, and you have to live in Never Never Land to think that they're not going to do the same thing with these 87,000 new IRS agents. I mean, that's filling the Philadelphia Eagles football stadium with IRS agents. That's how many people we're talking about here. And, Chris, I don't know if I've mentioned this to you before on the show, but, you know, I've gone through these IRS audits. You know, the government can go into your bank account. They can seize your property without due process. And that's exactly what they did. And the thing that's so frightening about it, people don't, I'm so sick of the Democrats saying, gee, if you're paying your taxes honestly, you have nothing to worry about. That's BS. I was paying my taxes honestly. We didn't owe the IRS all this money. They claimed we did. By the way, at the end of the story, you know, the IRS finally admitted that they were wrong and that actually they owed us money. We didn't owe them money. But the point is, we had to spend thousands and thousands of dollars to defend ourselves. It took 3.5 years. And in tax court, Chris, this is something, you know, only people who've gone through this understand. It's like having your wisdom teeth pulled. When you are under investigation from the IRS, Chris, you are guilty until you prove yourself innocent.
That's well said, first of all. And I have heard so many people call me over the last days to say that their accountants will often just say, just pay them.
Just pay it.
Yeah.
Because the cost, and that's, by the way, exactly, those are the intimidation tactics that the IRS uses. Now, look, that was, let's see, about 5 years ago. Now the IRS is going to have double the resources, folks. They're not going to go after Bill Gates. They're not going to be after these billionaires and multimillionaires. They have armies of tax lawyers and accountants, you know, that they can do battle with the IRS. That's why the IRS doesn't go near them. They go after the little guy, the little small business, the restaurant owner you were just talking about. Those are the people they go after because they're choice picking. You know, they don't have the way to fight back. And this idea that, gee, if you're not cheating on your tax, you have nothing to worry about, is ridiculous. Now, we know from Lois Lerner that Lois Lerner was one of the heads of enforcement under Obama. They weaponized the IRS. They did it. We're not making this up, folks. We're not some kind of, weird conspiracy theorist. They've done this already, and they will do it in spades under Biden. If you have a conservative voice, or you're a major Republican voice or donor or politician, Chris, people like you and me are going to be a suspect class. They're coming after us because they want to shut us up and shut us down. And they'll use the IRS as a tactic. And that is what a banana republic does. I'm not a paranoid guy, but I am very frightened by this administration and the absolute abuses of power to intimidate anyone who disagrees with them.
I'm not, I don't mean to embarrass you, but you have a markedly different tone about you than previous weeks we've spoken.
I'm nervous. This bill that passed this week is so anti-American.
Coming up, Herschel, the name that doesn't need any introduction. Herschel Walker is running for Senate in Georgia.
There's kids that are starving, and we got to stop this. And the way we can do it is by bringing people together, and they believe in separating people.
When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
As the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy enters our 25th anniversary year, we've remained committed to a single truth of world history, that ideas have consequences. To understand these ideas and their impact on today's politics, and to test them quantitatively, requires the unique curriculum we offer on our Malibu, California campus. Apply now for fall classes at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Herschel, the name that doesn't need any introduction. Herschel Walker is running for Senate in Georgia. He used to run over everyone else in his way, playing for the Bulldog. Herschel Walker has been attacked by the left in vicious, racist terms. He joined me on the Hugh Hewitt Show this week to discuss that. MSNBC viciously attacked you in the most racist thing I've heard on TV, calling you the Republican kind of Negro, and crime in Atlanta is out of control. So let's go in the order. Do you want to respond to that attack, or do you want to talk about crime?
Well, you know, we can do both. You know, one of the things, that attack, you know, a lot of the left can't win on issues, and they have their media attacking man. I think it's a shame that you have someone on MSNBC and the gentleman to say something like that, and it is a shame. And I think that's what's happening right now. People are so emotional, but I invite both of those MSNBC and the gentleman to come down and meet me. Let's talk about things. I think that's the way we bring this country together. I'm worried about this country, not worried about individual attacks, because there's people dying on the streets in here in Atlanta. There's kids that are starving, and you know, and we got to stop this. And the way we can do it is by bringing people together, and they believe in separating people.
Yeah, that's very much Proverbs 15:1 right there. A soft word turns away wrath. I get wound up when I see stuff like that, Herschel. And you were just that's a soft word turning away wrath. Did Raphael Warnock condemn that? Because I hope you would condemn a racist attack on Raphael Warnock. I know you would, but that was just outward.
Yeah, I would, and he's not going to condemn it. You know, one thing about Senator Warnock, and I've said it many times. Some of the things he said is not biblical. Some of the things he does, you can tell that he's not even a good senator because he doesn't seem to represent the people of Georgia. You know, he's voted with Joe Biden 96% of the time, and a lot of those policies do not match what is great for Georgia. So, you know, he's not going to condemn anything like that right now. You know, I've been they spent almost $34 million against me right now with lies and with different things, but I've said many times, no weapon formed against me shall prosper. Right now, the people want to know what you can do for the state of Georgia, what you can do for this country, and they can't win on their issues right now. So they're going to attack me, but I'm going to continue to get out there and talk to the people, to let the people know who I am, what I can do, and for them to forget about the football. You know, I haven't played football in over 30-something years. I've built companies. I've done a lot of great things after that, and that's what I want people to know. You don't want a man that never been knocked down and gotten up. You want someone that has been tested, and he know what he's going to do, and he's going to do it for the people.
I tell people, Herschel, that the first time I met you at an AM 920 event, I walked away telling people, don't get between Georgians and Herschel Walker, you'll get run over. And I know you are a terrific campaigner. I want to know, though, if people are talking about the cost of groceries. They went up 13% year over year. I don't know that people are able to feed their family right now.
That's what they're talking about. And that's why I said it. They can't win on the issues. They want to talk about everything except the cost of groceries. They want to talk about everything except the crime. They want to talk about everything except bringing wokeness into our military. You know, they continue to talk about there's peace through strength, but yet they're bringing wokeness into our military that's going to get our servicemen and women killed. They want to talk about, you know, not backing their men and women in blue, defunding the police, and yet we need to support our men and women in blue right now. The morale is down, recruitment is down, and we can't have a country like that. We got to have strong leaders in Washington and someone that's not afraid to pick that baton up and run with it. I think we've had a lot of people in Washington that just let that baton stay there and not try to move it forward. Well, what I want to do is bring unity back to Washington, bring people back together, and let them realize that this is the greatest country in the world, and the way we made it like that is by working together. We have problems, but we can solve them together and not out fighting among each other.
Well, let's talk about the number two issue. Number one issue is inflation, but I want to talk to you about crime. And, you know, crime is usually a local issue. You get these prosecutors that don't prosecute, no cash bail. You get border. The border's completely open and fentanyl's running into this country and killing kids and adults. Does crime matter in a United States Senate race?
Oh, it does matter, and it should matter a great deal. Crime should matter a great deal. Here in Atlanta, homicides are up over 40%, and I tell you something that is really astonishing. You know, rape is up over 200%.
We have a DA here in Fulton County, DA
Willis, who, and I happened to be looking at this in February, there was five gentlemen that was arrested on property crime, and combined, you look at over time, they've been arrested 155 times, and 31 of those times were felonies, and yet they're running the streets today. And I said, that cannot happen. We got to get the right people in office, the right DA that's going to do the right thing for the people. We got to make our streets safe so moms can walk out to go to the grocery store. Kids can go outside and play. I was at a women's group. We doing this week is Women for Walker Week. And I was at a women's group, and I had a young lady talking about her kids out walking in their neighborhood. And they had two gentlemen try to pick them up. They had two gentlemen try to kidnap them out in their neighborhood. We cannot have that. We cannot have that. We got to have our men and women in blue. We got to have their support. We got to support them, and we got to give them trust. Let them, they can trust us again.
Now, Herschel, the suburbs are the key, but I like to hear that you're working the inner city in Atlanta, because it's one of the, when I was there, I was literally there last month, and I thought to myself, it's too dangerous to go into some of these places. I went over to the Varsity, as I always do when I go there. I hope you go to the Varsity. You're in such great shape, you probably don't eat at the Varsity much, but I love the Varsity. But are you campaigning hard in the inner city? Are you looking for the black vote? Are you working it hard?
I do. I campaign everywhere, and that's what I told everyone. I'm going to campaign in the Democratic area, I'm campaign in Republican, Independent, because I represent everybody. You know, I'm not just going to say, people always say he's a conservative, he's Republican. No, I'm for the people. And I said, that's what Raphael Warnock, he's not for the people, he's for Joe Biden. He doesn't seem to listen to the people. And I think I may have forced him to come down and campaign a little bit, but that's what he should have been doing. Get in here listening to the people, because if he was listening to the people, he wouldn't have voted on some of the terrible bills that he's agreed to. You know, how in the world could he agree to a lot of the bills and voted on them when he never even talked to the people to see that they're going to hurt the people here in Georgia?
What did Georgia voters think about 87,000 new IRS staffers? I mean, I just can't believe Warnock voted for that. 87,000 new IRS people.
I was telling the women last night, think about this. I think Georgia stadium seats about 85,000, maybe a little more. You're telling me that we're going to get a stadium full of IRS agents, and yet the border is wide open. We can use border patrol. We can use putting money back into our police force. We can use buying military equipment. We can use that money to protect schools, and yet they're thinking about IRS agents. So you got to think about, what are they looking at? They're looking at to come after you. They're looking at to come after you to tax you. They're going to say they're not going to tax the middle class. That is totally not the truth, and that's what's been so funny. My guy I'm running against doesn't mind telling the people a lie. That's not the truth, and I'm going to say it's a lie. They're misleading the people, and I think that's what's wrong.
Well, I know you are willing to debate Raphael Warnock. I hope, though, you set conditions that you get a fair set of moderators. I've done debates for a long time, and my advice to the Georgians was make sure you just don't line up liberals, because they'll come after you and they'll throw softballs to Raphael Warnock.
Well, you saw that they were calling me name on MSNBC, but yet I said I want this debate to be about the people. And I've challenged to debate him in his hometown on October the 14th in front of an audience. And it'll be televised statewide, where everyone get an opportunity to see the contrast between Senator Warnock and myself.
Coming up,
a lot of these extremist groups on the left and the right are actually being empowered on some level by Chinese and Russian and Iranian intelligence services to create a greater level of division in our country.
When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. Stay with us.
Hi, it's Mike Gallagher. I start every day by reading through the stories at Daybreak Insider. It's a look at today's most compelling stories and provides responses from key conservatives in media and politics. Over 250,000 people get Daybreak Insider by email daily, and it's available to you at no cost. Go to daybreakinsider.com and simply plug in your email. That's daybreakinsider.com. In 5 minutes, you will be the most informed person in the office. That's daybreakinsider.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. The attack on Salman Rushdie last weekend as he spoke at a conference at Chautauqua, New York, was a reminder. We live in a dangerous world. We should not let our polarized politics here at home distract us from the reality of that attack. Radical Islam, Iran, Russia, China, they all demand our attention. Brandon Weikert, author of the forthcoming book, The Shadow War, Iran's Quest for Supremacy, join my colleague Seth Leibson on AM 960, The Patriot in Phoenix.
It seems like until Zawahiri was killed, no one was thinking about Al-Qaeda again. The president had, of course, assured us that they were gone. And now the administration is telling us, well, the fact that we could withdraw and still get Al-Zawahiri shows you how good a plan it was. No, it shows you that the Taliban made a hospitable home for Al-Zawahiri and his compatriots, Iran is sheltering his successors.
And furthermore, the question must be, who gave us the intel on Zawahiri's location, because it didn't come from anyone we know.
Okay.
It didn't come from our friends. It came from one of our enemies who was using us as their air force.
Okay.
To take out a rival is what I think happened.
All right. Fair enough. So there's always going to be and always has been these rivalries. And one of the ones that everyone was taught on 9/12 was that the Shiites and the Sunnis don't work together. We've talked about this before, and it's nonsense. As you put in your most recent column for American Greatness, as I just said, the two successors are being secreted by Iran.
And Seth, remember very quickly, Zarqawi, who was the head of al-Qaeda in Iraq, had a big falling out with bin Laden because bin Laden didn't want the Sunnis and Shiites to be fighting each other.
That's right.
And Zarqawi was a Sunni fundamentalist, and he said, no, I'm going to kill all the Shiites in Iraq.
That's right.
And then bin Laden's people leaked Zarqawi's location to General McChrystal and the U.S. Army Special Forces in Iraq, and we took him out for bin Laden.
I forgot about that connection. That's absolutely right. Bin Laden wanted nothing to do with Zarqawi's tactics.
Right.
That's right.
Which
That's
is why
right.
I'm worried that Zawahiri was taken out by information that was given to us from whom? We don't have people on the ground in Kabul anymore. Who gave us his information?
That's a great
And what was the intended purpose?
That's a great point. I guess there's this new delegation of Congress people led by Senator Markey of Massachusetts to visit Taiwan. China's engaging in drills on Taiwan again.
Right. And they're actually engaging in a very specific drill that should worry us. They're engaged in anti-submarine warfare drills. Submarines, as I've said for years now, will be the tip of any spear in a war for Taiwan against China. And our fleet of submarines is already not large enough. And ultimately, if we start losing our subs, replacing them will not be easy. And the Chinese know this, and that is why they are now really going hot and heavy with anti-submarine warfare, because the Chinese can pretty much easily replace their lost submarines thanks to the manufacturing capability that we've given them since the 1970s. Ours is a little bit more difficult and time-consuming.
Brandon, as long as we're discussing our enemies, it's important that we also talk about, you know, the relationship between them. Iran and China have a comprehensive strategic partnership. People need to understand this relationship, don't they?
There is a growing alliance. It originally was just more indirect, but now it is becoming really formalized between Russia, China, and Iran.
Yeah.
That these three powers are consolidating. Iran basically acts as a quasi-colony of both Russia and China. China is more economic, although they do have this new deal, which will see hundreds of Chinese security personnel moving in to protect their investments in Iran. Iran has traditionally been a military base for Russian forces going into Syria, along with Iranian forces. In fact, when the Russians started running into problems in Ukraine, the Iranian Revolutionary Guards Corps volunteered to send sniper units up to fight alongside the Russians in Ukraine as repayment for Russia having assisted Iran for as long as they have in supporting Bashar al-Assad of Syria against the jihadi elements that we have been backing there, which we should not be backing, but this is what it is. So our enemies are coalescing, and we seem to be in America subdividing. And it's really pathetic to see, and I can't help but to think that a lot of these extremist groups on the left and the right are actually being empowered on some level by Chinese and Russian and Iranian intelligence services to create a greater level of division in our country at a time when our enemies know abroad that America will be called upon to stand up for our allies alongside our allies. And if we're too busy fighting each other, we're not going to be of use to anyone, and the whole world system will be rewritten.
Coming up.
When the students talk about politics nowadays, they are more likely to quote somebody on Twitter or TikTok than they are their own parents.
When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. As we look ahead, we have to ask the biggest question of all. Is our next generation up to the task? Are they ready and willing to take the mantle of leadership to defend the country? The greatest experiment in constitutional democracy the world has known? Jerry Adams is concerned. He's a veteran teacher, California Teacher of the Year in 2014, and the author of Hollowed Out, A Warning About America's Next Generation. He was a guest of Charlie Kirk.
Tell us about your book and why you decided to write it.
Yeah, well, I've been a teacher for almost 25 years now. And one of the really interesting and unique things about being a teacher is that you start to see things in the classroom that the broader society takes a while to figure out. And having taught for 25 years, I'll tell you, in the last 5 to 7 years, there have been some profoundly disturbing changes in the way that my students spend their time, in the way that they look at the country, in their value system, in the way that they look at adulthood. And this book is really essentially a battle cry. It's me waving my hands in the abyss saying, hey, other adults in America, we have a profound problem here with our young people. And I couldn't agree with you more. This is not a political issue. It is a cultural, yes, spiritual, and moral issue. Our children are literally being hollowed out of the values and the behaviors that typically give life its meaning and its purpose.
So tell me, what are you seeing? What is that warning? What is the canary in the coal mine?
The problem is that our young people literally are living their lives untethered to adult values, adult responsibilities, adult morals. They spend their time in a way that you and I, and I know you're a bit younger than I am, I'm sorry to say,
yeah,
but you know, they literally spend 9 to 10 hours a day on their cell phone.
That's right.
And think about that. When you spend 9 or 10 hours a day on your cell phone, that means you're not dating. You're not going out.
That's right.
You don't have intensive friendships. You're not reading. And nowadays, literally, the attention span of our young people has been destroyed. I don't know if you saw this, Charlie, but a few days ago or a few weeks ago, our friends at Netflix realized that teenagers were reading the subtitles. And they thought, oh, this is great. Now the young people are reading. No. They were reading the subtitles because they didn't want to miss anything in the scene. And they wanted to go right back to their cell phones. Okay, so we're talking about a generation that is not only more lonely and more isolated, but, you know, it's interesting because our friends on the left, you know, if they want to insult the book, they'll say, well, you know, every old person is a curmudgeon and a crank and they think the next generation is going to hell. No. What I'm seeing in my classroom is that my students, who I care very deeply about, are the most unhappy people exactly in American right history. They yes are depressed. They are isolated. Look at the data. Even the New York Times is doing articles about how young women are going to the ER. They're literally going to emergency rooms because their mental health is in crisis. Look at the self-harm. Look at the rates of suicide. And of course, it makes sense, Charlie. They don't have the kind of connective tissue that typically gives life its meaning. They don't have intensive friendships. They don't go to church. They don't have meals with their parents. And, you know, as you've pointed out before, these problems were here before COVID, you know, and COVID, oh my goodness, just put them on steroids. I mean, amplified them and made them worse.
So just let's take a sample year. Average junior or senior in high school in 2000, average in 2010, average 2015, and then average now. The reason I'm asking is because your detractors or your critics will say, oh, these kids grow out of it. But no, you have a couple decade sample size where you could, would you say that the average student in the year 2000, 2010 were marginally within the same issues, yeah, worldview, and then you saw it just go off a cliff? Can you expand on that, please?
Yes, that is such a great question. Thank you for pointing that out. Is if you look at students from, you know, 1998 to 2010, you know, roughly the same experience. But in the last 10 to 12 years, there has been a radical change. I mean, I could go on and on, but I mean, so many things. Number one is students used to, when we talk about politics, you know, students used to say, well, my mom says this, or my dad says this, or my grandparents say this. Charlie, nobody talks about the parents anymore. Nobody talks about their grandparents anymore.
They don't care about
people don't
them.
Eat, no. Well, and they don't talk to them. You know, people don't eat meals with families anymore. I remember about 5 or 6 years ago, I mentioned the phrase, the family dinner. And my students looked at me like I was on something. Like, what are you talking about? I said, you know, You know, when you sit down with your two parents and, you know, you sit down and eat a meal, they're like, we don't do that. Most of my students, because I live in an impoverished area, most of them have a single parent. They're working multiple jobs. When they get their dinner, they go to their room and sit on the couch. The kids, they go to their room. I mean, let's be honest. When the students talk about politics nowadays, they are more likely to quote somebody on Twitter or TikTok than they are their own parents. Jeez. But the big, big, big seismic change, and this is the big one, cell phones, the technology has changed everything. It is a, I mean, there is a chasm, a Grand Canyon between, now you said 2015, about 2014, 2015, yep, and today, everything changed. I mean, if you think about it this way, if you were an alien and you came down and you looked at kids in the year 2010, and then you came back in the year 2022, you would think that we'd evolved to look down all the time, that we now have something that's evolved into our hands. The attention spans are zero. I mean, one of the most disturbing things that I saw last year was that a student at the end of the year said, Mr. Adams, you know, you keep recommending all these great movies for every unit. Like, you know, I was teaching World War II, and I'm like, when you get older, you got to watch Schindler's List and Saving Private Ryan. And they're like, we don't watch movies. And I said, well, why not? And they're like, well, we can't pay attention to them. We can't sit there for 2 hours. There's no way. And not only that, by the way, but when you talk about anxiety, I mean, think about this, Charlie. When you and I were growing up, if we had a bad day at school and you got in a fight with your friend or a teacher was a jerk to you or you're just stressed out, you know what? You go home and you get 16 hours away from it. Our kids are on all the time, you know, and when they're having a fight with a friend, it follows them home. They're on their devices 9 or 10 hours a day. And again, the pandemic made this so much worse. It added on average 4 or 5 hours a day of being on their devices. So these kids, I mean, imagine being a boxer and you go into the ring. And when you go back to your corner, imagine there's nobody there, right? There is no family dinner. There is no church service. There are no adults. There's nobody to give you water, say it's okay. And the next day they're going back into the ring. No wonder they're stressed out of their minds.
Why have parents basically abdicated their responsibility or their role? I believe it's the worst generation of parents in the history of parenting. I could prove it through a lot of different things. Am I wrong here? Or do parents just not understand the severity of this?
If I'm going to be perfectly honest with you and your audience, I wrote Hollowed Out 95% because of the things I was seeing as a teacher. But you know what? I haven't been a perfect parent either. I am guilty of one of these people who gave my children devices before they absolutely should have. As human beings, we learn by example. And we are either improved or depraved by the examples in front of us. And so what we have done by giving our children these phones is we have displaced the connective tissue of adulthood and replaced the, you know, the toxicity of these phones instead. I mean, think about it this way. You know, I can't believe I actually have to say this, or you have to say this, but you know what? You actually have to raise children. I think that we have a fetish in this country with childhood and elevating childhood values and elevating childhood behavior. We actually have to stand up and be the adults again.
Coming up.
If the adults are not going to be the adults, at the end of the day, you're going to have an infantile society.
More with Jeremy Adams on Hollowed Out in the final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Georgine Rice. This week in the Christian Outlook, sponsored by the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy, we'll look at the fallout from the FBI raid on President Trump's Mar-a-Lago home.
It erodes confidence in what is a bedrock of our Constitution.
President Biden signs legislation that will more than double the number of IRS agents.
They are weaponizing to go after people who they disagree with politically.
Boston Children's Hospital comes under fire for their treatment of transgender youth.
Christians are opposed to this kind of so-called surgical procedures regardless of age.
And the CDC is being scrutinized for the past 2.5 years of pandemic oversight.
They were so bad at their very limited scope of work.
All this and more. Be sure to join us and visit our website at christianoutlook.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Over at my website, you'll find the candidates who I think need to win if this country is going to get back on the right course. The demographics have changed dramatically in the Republican Party. I know many of the parents in my audience, they're new Republicans. They're concerned about what happened in the schools last year. Our listenership is invested for the next generation, their kids, their grandkids. They care, and we should care deeply. Let's return for a few more minutes with Charlie Kirk, with Jeremy Adams, talking about Hollowed Out, a warning about America's next generation.
In some ways, you are the canary in the coal mine. You're the harbinger. You're the warning of things to come. I mean, so let me ask it this way. How does this generation mature? What does this look like 10 years from now, absent immediate intervention? You're trying to say it's really bad.
You know, when you look at, you know, essentially the relationships and the institutions that build a civil society, I mean, Aristotle understood that the first family, the first political unit you're ever born into is the family. And when we look at the amount of, you know, family time that young people are spending with their actual family, it's less. It really is down to the parent, because, you know, you go to a restaurant and you'll see a family, and my own family, we've been guilty of this and we are working on it, is, you know, you sit there in silence. I mean, let me tell you a quick story about this. So as a teacher, about 10 years ago or more than that, if you ended the day early, said, okay, kids, you know, we're done with the lecture. We got 2 minutes till the bell rings. You know, do whatever you want to do. You know, the class would erupt, right? And kids would just talk and talk and talk and talk. And they'd be gossiping and flirting. Same with parties. You go to a teenage party, people are loud. They're getting rowdy. Let me tell you something. Nowadays, if you end class early, silence, Charlie. Silence. Nice. Nobody is engaging. I went to a teenage party a few years ago to pick up my daughter. And I walk into the room. I expect them to be, you know, yelling. And everybody's in there on the couch looking at their phones. The adults have got to remove it. Again, if the adults are not going to be the adults, at the end of the day, you're going to have an infantile society. I mean, you're talking about, what does this look like 10 years from now? We're looking at the fact that they don't want to commit to things. They don't particularly think that the country is worth defending. And most of all, their attention spans are dead.
So, battle plan for parents. What's the big takeaways? What are the action steps?
Yeah, the biggest takeaway is you have got to put yourself back into the physical space of your children. What does that mean? That means taking away their phones. That means family dinner. That means being involved in school. That means, number one, talking to them. The studies are very clear. Conversations, even if you're talking about silly stuff, actually talking to your students every day is the number one thing you can do. You have to understand, one of the worst things about the COVID lockdown was a lot of our young people forgot how to engage. The kind of membrane that connects families and connects communities were destroyed. Young people aren't going to football games, and you ask them why, and they say, well, because it's awkward. I might have to have a conversation with an adult. They don't like to look you in the eyes as much anymore. So we've got to put ourselves back into the physical spaces. But the other thing I would say, and this, I cannot underestimate this enough. I mean, you have got to also put yourself back into the moral and spiritual space of our young people.
Thank you for joining us today. Town Hall Review is part of the Salem Podcast Network. If you haven't signed up for our podcast yet, why not take a minute to do so? Go to townhallreview.com. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin, producer David Pouchon, Michael Cook, Tim Gantner, Adam Ramsey, and Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.